Hi, this is John. I work on the digital team at Family Talk, and I want to wish you a Merry Christmas.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to today's Christmas edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, along with your host, psychologist and best-selling author, Dr. James Dobson. And Dr. Dobson, throughout this month, we're going to be airing the best programs from this past year. And today, we'll hear the final part of one of our best programs of 2014.
Well, that's right. And it was a lot of fun to have Dr. Carson in the studio with us for the day. I really enjoyed interacting with him and hearing his thoughts on some of the deepest problems our country is facing. I think this is one of the smartest men that I know. And it doesn't surprise me at all that the three programs we recorded with him were among the very best of the year. Again, I want to reiterate something I said to our listeners, just to be safe in regard to the IRS. We're very careful about the IRS for good reasons. And as a 501c3 nonprofit, Family Talk cannot endorse any political candidate. We just don't do it. And that is not what we're here to do today. This program was one of the best of the year because of the response of our listeners, and we're simply re-airing our interviews, one of them today, with Dr. Carson about his new book, One Nation, and it was first aired this past summer.
That's right. Well, I'd like to reiterate who our guest is. Dr. Ben Carson recently retired as the Director of Pediatric Neurosurgery at Johns Hopkins after 35 years of service. During his time at the hospital, he became the first neurosurgeon in history to successfully separate conjoined twins who were joined at the head. Dr. Carson is also the recipient of the Presidential Medal of Freedom, which is the highest civilian honor in the United States. And that medal was given to him by President George W. Bush. So let's get to the program. Here is Dr. James Dobson and Dr. Ben Carson for the conclusion of our program, One Nation, on today's Best Of edition of Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Well, in your book, One Nation, you talk about compromise. I think it's the only thing I've heard you say or write that I have questions about.
Well, you have
because
to understand what I mean.
The other side will not compromise. I mean, it is their way or the highway.
Right. You have to understand what I mean by compromise. When I say compromise, I don't mean compromise your principles. I mean compromise in the way that you get to a solution. There are different ways to get there. And some people find that very hard to accept. For instance, you know, some people have trouble with my position on the Second Amendment. I believe in the Second Amendment. I think it's a very important part of our Constitution. The reason that it's there is because we want to have an active citizenry that could be a militia in case of invasion, but also that could defend itself if the government ever got out of control. And they need to be able to have weapons if they're going to do that. So there's no way I would ever compromise that. But what I've said is there are situations going on in our society, very dangerous situations, where there's a lot of gun violence. You know, we have situations where people who have clear mental problems have been able to gain relatively easy access to, you know, pretty dangerous weapons and wipe out a lot of people. I said, what we need to do is sit down and have a conversation. Use our collective intellect to see if there is anything that we can do to ameliorate those situations without compromising the Second Amendment. Some people say, no, you can't even talk about it. And I think that's the wrong approach to take. And what we wind up with is a situation where we have some people say, unless I have 100% agreement with what I believe, I'm taking my marbles and I'm going home. That's why the current president is in office.
There is such common sense that comes from you. And you have to have been raised in an understanding of Scripture and believe in it to talk like this and to do this. And you're not doing it as a person who rants and raves. That's what you mean by finding this understanding with one another.
And unless you talk, you'll never come to a solution. Yeah. And of course, that's exactly what Saul Alinsky advocates.
Yeah.
One of his rules for radicals, never have a conversation with your adversary because that humanizes them and your job is to demonize them. And that's why they would sit around and they call you names and they go all around the subject, but they don't actually have a conversation about the subject. And you just have to call them on it when it happens.
Well, I've been there and done that. It's always been a little, I won't say frustrating, but it's interesting to me that every word almost that I've said for 40 years is still available today. I've done 8,000 radio programs, and they're all on tape. And they're all on CD. And I've written however many books, and you can find them there. If I've said anything hateful of people, show it to me.
Yeah.
Where has that occurred? How do they get off saying that I believe things I don't?
Because to them, if you don't agree with them, it's hate speech.
Yeah, it is hate speech.
And, you know, I've been accused of hate speech, too. And, you know, the last thing that I'm going to do is engage in that. But because you don't agree with them, obviously you're hateful.
They accuse Jesus of the same thing.
And you look at the things that are going on at our universities. This is truly alarming. Universities are supposed to be the bastion of intellectual thought, of exploration. And what are they teaching the kids? If they don't agree with you, you don't want to hear them, and you don't want anybody else to hear them. And if they have a business, you want to tear it down. If they have a reputation, you want to destroy it. I mean, are you kidding me? This is the way fascists think. We have to do better than that. We have to teach people to engage in conversation, to truly be intellectuals, not to put your fingers in your ears and stick out your tongue.
How much jeopardy is the First Amendment in today?
Well, the real danger is if believers submit. If they adopt a go-along-to-get-along attitude, I don't want to create any waves, I don't want to create disturbance, then it is in grave danger. We lose by default.
What worries me is that the judges will be the ones that make the decisions, not the people.
Well, rogue judges, that's another problem, and it needs to be dealt with. But the only way it is going to be dealt with, conservatives, Christians, you know, people with values have got to adopt the same kind of attitude as Saul Alinsky. Saul Alinsky, if you read his book, he says, you know, we can't get 100% there, but, you know, we can get 15% this time and 30% and 20%, and eventually we'll be there. We have to do the same thing. We may not get everything we want exactly at one time, but when it comes to voting, if you vote for somebody who agrees with you 90% of the time, as opposed to sitting at home and letting the other guy get in who's against you 100% of the time, you're never going to make progress toward the goalpost. And are there people? Some people call them rhinos, they call them whatever. Yeah, there are. There are those people. But I know a lot of those people. I've talked to a lot of those people. I've convinced a lot of those people. They're a lot easier to convince than the other guys. I tell you, and particularly if you have the right kind of leadership, they will come in line very quickly.
Dr. Carson, as a physician who has been in academia, medical school, and as a surgeon and all that we know about, you must have some strong feelings about Obamacare.
Absolutely.
Or as they call it, Affordable Care Act.
Yes, in quotations. Yes, I have very strong feelings. I feel that, you know, as a compassionate country, we should provide good health care for all of our citizens. And we have the ability to do that. You know, we pay twice as much per capita for health care in this country as the next closest nation. So it's not that we haven't put the resources in. It's that the way that we are doing it doesn't make any sense. The Affordable Care Act only exacerbates that. So what I think we should be doing There are a number of things that I've proposed, but the key part is the health savings accounts. Everybody gets a health savings account the day they are born. And with that health savings account, you're in charge, you and your health care provider. There are a number of ways to fund the health savings accounts. You give people the ability to shift money within their health savings accounts. So let's say you were short $500. You know, Shirley could give you $500 out of her HSA.
Yes.
Or your grandfather or your granddaughter or your son or your daughter, anybody in the family. So it gives you enormous financial flexibility within the health savings account system. Also, I make it possible for people to donate from their health savings account to other individuals, 5% a year. So people become dependent on each other rather than on the government. And bear in mind that since all of your routine stuff is coming out of your HSA, the cost of your catastrophic insurance or your bridge insurance is going to dramatically go down.
Yeah.
It brings the whole healthcare system into the free market because you're in control. So they have to cater to you, the individual. And bringing it into the free market is what will control price and quality.
Just saying that will threaten the socks off of the big government people.
Of course.
What's their reaction to that?
Their reaction is, oh, that can't possibly work. Although they know it can work because in the Affordable Care Act, they have a provision for health savings account. And they limit the amount of money that you can put into it. You know, severely limit it because they know themselves how well it works. There are a number of places around the country where organizations, large organizations, have huge HSAs. Virtually all of them. Their employers love them. The employees love them. Everybody loves them. You go to a country like Singapore, they have what they call medical savings accounts, mandatory for everybody. Tremendous flexibility. They save enormous amounts of money, and their costs are a quarter of ours.
What is the future of Obamacare? What's going to happen? Is it going to crash and burn?
I think it is going to crash and burn. It wasn't really designed as a healthcare system. It was designed as a people control system.
Yeah.
And I don't think they really care whether it worked or not, because even in disaster, it would provide the pathway to what they really want, which is universal single payer.
If they can control your health.
Then they can control everything.
And every bit of information about yourself.
Correct.
I mean, it's breathtaking to me that the most intimate relationship I have with anybody other than Shirley
is
my physician, who knows about everything there is to know about me, not just health, but lifestyle and many other things.
Sure.
And that is now going off to who knows who in Washington.
Absolutely.
And will be a public knowledge for anybody who wants to access
it. And they've acknowledged that they don't really have the ability to keep it secure.
Why? How did we get in this mess?
Well, the more important question is, why do we tolerate it?
Yes.
Why are we, you know, probably more interested in the big sporting event that's going on next week? Yeah. Or who's on Dancing with the Stars? You know, we have got to wake up. This is serious.
Mm. I want to do something now that I think our listeners are going to find interesting. As a contrast to what we've done for 3 days. We mentioned in one of our previous conversations your speech given to the Presidential Prayer Breakfast in 2013,
yes,
which was fantastic. I've got a recording of it, and I wish everybody could hear it. But you said something about political correctness at that time that I thought was brilliant, and I would like to let our listeners hear that little piece of your speech. You've already tipped your hand. You said earlier that you think political correctness is dangerous.
It's very destructive.
And destructive.
Because it puts a wet blanket over conversation.
Yeah.
It keeps people from talking. And talking is the only way that you will ever get to solutions.
Yeah.
And I'm fond of saying that, you know, before people get divorced, what happens? They stop talking.
Yeah.
They stop communicating. The next thing you know, their spouse is the devil incarnate. Well, that's exactly what's going on between liberals and conservatives.
Or adults and their teenagers.
Absolutely.
Yeah. All right, let's hear that clip.
Now, it's not my intention to offend anyone. I have discovered, however, in recent years that it's very difficult to speak to a large group of people these days and not offend someone. And you know, people walk around with their feelings on their shoulders waiting for you to say something. Did you hear that? And they can't hear anything else you say. The PC police are out in force at all times. I remember once I was talking to a group about the difference between a human brain and a dog's brain. And a man got offended. He said, "You can't talk about dogs like that." But, you know, people just focus in on that, completely miss the point of what you're saying. And we've reached a point where people are afraid to actually talk about what they want to say because somebody might be offended. People are afraid to say Merry Christmas at Christmas time. It doesn't matter whether the person you're talking to is Jewish or, you know, whether they're any religion. That's a salutation, a greeting of goodwill. We've got to get over this sensitivity. You know, and it keeps people from saying what they really believe. You know, I'm reminded of a very successful young businessman, and he loved to buy his mother these exotic gifts for Mother's Day, and he ran out of ideals, and then he ran across these birds. These birds were cool. You know, they cost $5,000 a piece. They could dance, they could sing, they could talk. He was so excited, he bought two of them. Sent them to his mother, couldn't wait to call her up on Mother's Day. "Mother, mother, what'd you think of those birds?" And she said, "They was good." He said, No. "Mother, you didn't eat those birds. Those birds cost $5,000 a piece. They could dance, they could sing, they could talk." And she said, "Well, they should have said something." And you know, that's where we end up too if we don't speak up for what we believe. And you know, what we need to do. What we need to do in this PC world is forget about unanimity of speech and unanimity of thought. And we need to concentrate on being respectful of those people with whom we disagree. And that's when I think we begin to make real progress. And one last thing about political correctness, which I think is a horrible thing, by the way. I'm very, very compassionate, and I'm not ever out to offend anyone. But PC is dangerous. Because you see, this country, one of the founding principles was freedom of thought and freedom of expression. And it muffles people. It puts a muzzle on them. And at the same time, keeps people from discussing important issues while the fabric of their society is being changed. And we cannot fall for that trick. And what we need to do is start talking about things that are important, things that were important in the development of our nation.
Man, that's phenomenal. That is phenomenal. Yes. Well, there's one thing you're not. It's not a fearmonger. No. And you are rather positive about the future of this country.
I am. And it stems from what Candy and I see as we travel around the country. I mean, people are energized. I've never seen people like this before. And believe me, they're coming out.
There are a lot of people listening to us right now who do not know what you're talking about because they're not there. They're not out there speaking to people. They're not hearing from people.
Yeah.
But you and I are, and I know that it's true.
Yeah. They are energized. They are out there. And everybody who's out there, do not give up. That's what they want you to do. They want you to think that it's hopeless. It is nowhere close to hopeless.
And the key to it is prayer.
Absolutely. And we are a Judeo-Christian nation. I don't care that the president thinks we're not. We are. Go back and read the writings of the people who founded this nation. Read their letters. There can be no doubt in your mind about whether we're a Judeo-Christian nation if you read those things. And
are we still?
Most of us are still believers. It's just that we've been beaten down. Yeah, and it's time for us to stand up for what we believe in. We don't have to submit to them just because they say something. I remember some years ago, you know, some lawyers came to Candy and me, and they said, you can't put your Think Big banners up in public schools because the G stands for God. And the First Amendment says there can be no government support of religious expression.
Oh, my goodness.
Well, I reminded them that the First Amendment also says that there can be no government suppression of religious expression. We had a rather vigorous argument. I suggested we resolve it at the level of the Supreme Court, which seemed bold and reckless, but it really wasn't, because I knew the next week I was going to the Supreme Court to receive the Jefferson Award. So I figured I would ask while I was there. And I did. And just as Sandra Day O'Connor said, they were all wet. They had no idea what they were talking about. Of course, that was no violation. And the problem is so often we back down too easily just because somebody comes along and says, you can't do that. Says who? This is America. This is a free country. Of course we can do it.
How can people pray for you, Dr. Carson?
Just pray that God would continue to guide, to open the right doors, to close the wrong doors, to bring the right associations, and we'll be fine.
Are you calling for a revival, for a spiritual renewal?
Our nation, as I said, is a Judeo-Christian nation. And unless we grasp what that means and understand what it says on all of our money, in God we trust, then we're not going to make it. Somebody else is going to take over. So we have got to bring back the spirituality of America that is the thing that distinguished us. It's the thing that made us different. It's the thing that made us great. Why would we turn our back on it?
What a great program we've enjoyed today here on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk. I'm Dr. Meg Meeker, and we've been listening to the conclusion of a program with Dr. Ben Carson titled One Nation. This program was one of the best programs of 2014, and if you missed the first 2 days, please visit our website, drjamesdobson.org, to hear parts 1 and 2. If you would like more information about Dr. Ben Carson or his book, One Nation, please visit the website that I just mentioned, drjamesdobson.org, or call us at 877-732-6825. This is Dr. Meg Meeker saying Merry Christmas. Thank you for listening, and we'll see you again next time for another Best Of edition on Dr. James Dobson's Family Talk.
Family Talk is not affiliated with Focus on the Family.
Hello, everyone. This is James Dobson, and I have some great news to share with you today. Friends of Family Talk have stepped forward with a generous matching grant that doubles any gift that we receive from you this month. That means that your donation will reach twice as many families and have twice the impact for the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now is a vital time for the ministry of Family Talk, as the money that we receive before the end of the year sets the stage for the ministry impact that we can have in the upcoming new year. We plan the entire year based on the donations that come in from now through December 31st. And we'd love to be able to expand and reach more families than ever in 2015. So I hope you will make a contribution today. You can donate by visiting drjamesdobson.org or by calling us at 877-732-6825. That's 877-732-6825. Merry Christmas, everyone, and as always, thank you for listening to Family Talk.
Hi, everyone. Dr. Meg Meeker here. Are you on the go without much time to log into all of your social media pages? Twitter is a great way for staying informed on the things that matter to you with just a quick look at your phone. Follow Dr. James Dobson, FT, and receive great tips, resources, and information that is important to you in short and simple tweets. Again, that's Dr. James Dobson, capital F, capital T.
Without a doubt, the best time of the year for shared memories is Christmas. I've always loved Christmas time, and I really don't mind if everyone knows it. Some of my happiest memories, both as a child and as an adult, have been rooted in the Christmas season. I remember the year my father went to the bank and bought 20 new crisp $1 bills back in the days when a dollar would buy a meal. He attached a Merry Christmas note to each dollar and handed them out, one apiece to the newsboy, the shoeshine man, the postman, and 17 others. He was merely expressing how much he loved and appreciated them as people and as friends. Another memory is from many years later. My wife and two children and I boarded a plane for Kansas City to spend the holidays with my parents. When I stepped off the plane and into the terminal, I instantly caught sight of my 6'4" father towering over the crowd. There was a twinkle in his eyes and a smile on his face, and Mom, of course, was aglow with excitement. Her family had come home for Christmas. Now these good people are gone, and only the memory lingers on. None of these moments was historic or earth-shaking, but they've become part of the treasure chest of remembrances that defines us as a family. During this Christmas season, I hope your own times of excitement and sharing and fellowship will leave you with a special gift, memories that will last for a lifetime.
Hear more at MyFamilyTalk.com.